It's time to get nerdy, y'all.
A little bit of gaming history for you.
Something relevant in gaming and discuss our opinions on it.
Should we kick it out of here or should we kick start it?
This is the part where you, the listeners, try to stump the hosts.
I'm not a lawyer. I just play one on a podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, lads and lasses of all ages, welcome to the show. It is Tuesday, June 11th, 2024, and it is time to get nerdy. Welcome to episode 307 of Two Nerds in a Pod, the nerdiest gaming podcast in the multiverse. And I am Maxion. And I have my co-host, a fellow nerd, a connoisseur of comedy. He's not only the first option, but he's also the best option, Mr. Lom Galuka, also known as Mr. Nice Guy 425. And for the next hour, we're going to talk about all sorts of topics in video gaming as they relate to news, history, trivia, lawsuits, and a little bit of everything in between. But first, Mr. Nice Guy, it's been a few weeks since we've been able to get back to our weekly podcast.
Yes.
How are you doing, man?
Dude, it's funny. A weekly podcast. How many weeks has it been? Like 3 weeks since we've recorded?
I think it's just been two. It might have been three. But life comes at you fast.
Yeah, man. Life. If you're not watching, you might miss it. Well, shout out to you for putting stuff in the feed every week and making sure there's something awesome for our good friends and listeners to put into their ears. But Mac, it has been a very, very eventful couple weeks. Just family stuff. Just living the dream, suburban dad life. And it's almost our day. And when I say our day, Mac, I mean the day of anyone, you and me included, who is a man in America. It's almost Father's Day, dude. And I consider it to be everybody's day, regardless of your kid situation, regardless of your marital situation. Just like we celebrate women on Mother's Day and on other days, we celebrate manhood, I think, on Father's Day. And so I'm looking forward to that.
Cool. I've never felt like Father's Day spoke to me.
Oh, really? Okay, I'm learning new things.
Yeah. Yeah, no. So, I mean, like, I'm thrilled that you enjoy it. I've just always been like, yeah, Father's Day isn't a me day until I have kids.
Fair enough.
You know. But hey, congratulations, you, Mr. Nice Guy, a fantastic father. If your busy schedule, wherein you support so many of your children's extracurricular activities.
Exactly.
If that alone as a metric, I think it puts you solidly in a top dad club.
You know what's funny? I was doing this bit for a while where I would joke about people asking me how I can possibly afford to have my kids in all of these different extracurricular activities. Uh-huh. And it was a very good joke. And the punchline was, how can I afford not to? Like, that's my retirement plan. One of them is going to be the next LeBron James, I promise you. And I went deeper than that. But I think about that every time people bring up extracurriculars. Like, I'm training some pro athletes, baby.
This is part of the comedy show you got here for free, everybody. So remember, Mr. Nice Guy, the first option comedy special that's up on Dry Bar Comedy that you can watch on YouTube. You better watch that. But also, you know, maybe another one in the future.
Time to record one within like the next year and a half. I got to get new stuff out there, Mac. I got to get new stuff out there. Well, Mac, what has been new with you? You've been globetrotting, from what I understand. Tell me about your life the past couple weeks.
Well, so long as globetrotting is now exclusively limited to several hundred miles in the Pacific Northwest and West, then yes.
That counts.
That counts. So first, I did a trip to another city in Oregon to hang out with some family because it was their birthdays. And so we had good times. We had a holiday weekend. Didn't get back as soon as we had expected. But also, we came back with a cat. It was a little bit... Yeah, it was a little bit of a surprise, but also, like, a good thing. So, like, we've got a cat now.
That sentence was a surprise as well. I was not expecting that.
I try to keep people guessing. But also, it's been great, though, so far. And maybe I'll tell you some more stories about that. But also, I went back to Utah, flew out there to go to a friend's wedding. Some friends from high school
nice.
That, like, they had, like... gone to like junior prom or whatever together, but like, you know, just wasn't right, what have you, went their separate ways, and then like, you know, nearly 18-19 years later came back together and are getting married, and like a fantastic service, lots of friends there, lots of people that I hadn't seen for the better part of 15 years, or in some cases 20 years. And it was kind of a wild and surreal sort of trip. Even got a chance to hang out with family thrown in there. Friends who we got together and played a game of GURPS, which for those of you who don't know, it's the better D&D. Just good times. So, like, it has been a lot, but a lot of really good and fun stuff.
I gotta know, did you dance at the wedding? Did you shake your groove thing?
Of course I shook my groove at the wedding. Dude, you know, I just get in the groove.
That is a hidden reference to something later.
Nice. Well, we'll look for that Easter egg later. Mm-hmm. I don't want to get too off topic, but I gotta say, there's this TikTok thing going on right now where people are posting pictures of their parents dancing and saying, I asked my parents to dance like how they used to dance in the 80s, and they play this 80s song. And for whatever reason, I just picture that that's how you dance. Not because you're old school, not because you're not down with the 2020 stuff, but just because you're a man of the people. And I could see you having those 80s style dance moves. And I wish I could have been there to witness it. But what else, Mac? Tell me more. What else is going on? You've told me plenty already. I don't know how you could top what you've already said. Is there more?
I think that's about it. There's lots of like fun little stories, but you know, I don't want to bore everybody. Just a taste, and that's you can ask if you want more later. Mr. Nice Guy, I think we've got some stuff to chat about.
We do, and I was just gonna say, well, then why don't we do what we do best and hop right up in that gaming news, Mac? How do you feel about that?
Absolutely. What is new in video gaming? Because I've been out of the loop.
Dude, so much. And once again, this is Two Nerds in a Pod, episode number 307. Thank you for tuning in, those of you who are here live and those of you who are here after the fact. We appreciate each and every one of your ears. Mac, so much to talk about. Obviously, Summer Games Fest just happened, which has been the replacement of E3. I'm not going to go through every single announcement that took place, but I've got to say, you know, without a news article to reference, I think that this is the future. And we've talked in the past about, is it going to be digital forever, these types of game showcases, or will we some point get back to the in-person E3, the PAXs that still happen? I think this is the future, man. Like, just being able to sit at your computer and get all the info. What do you think? Are you still old school about this, or what do you think?
Look, I have had the good fortune to be able to go to E3. I've had the good fortune to go to many in-person conventions, technology, or even, you know, comic cons and the like. And there is something fun and special about the in-person thing. However, from what I know about how things were working out, basically we had made it completely or almost functionally impossible for people to go and present their games if they didn't have the backing of,
yes,
you know, Sony specifically. Yeah, or whatever else.
Or one of the big three, right?
Yeah, it was just because the cost for floor space was so prohibitive that, you know, you basically had to have a medium to large size publisher backing you in order to go to these things. At least E3. Smaller in-person conventions,
yep,
more approachable and easier, but yeah. And so basically what I'm getting at is, I'm old school. I'd like the old stuff. I just wish that we, and by we I mean whoever was in charge of E3, hadn't really just tanked the ability of smaller people to participate and be a part of it and just, you know, buy those prices.
Yeah, and I will say for those indie developers, like you said, there are plenty of opportunities to go to indie developer showcases, to go to PAX, to go to different places, and to get your name out that way, to send codes to Two Nerds in a Pod. We haven't done the indie game of the week in a while, but we will get back at it, my friends. Rest assured, we've been very, very busy. But yeah, I miss the in-person aspect of E3, but I also think that the convenience of the way things exist now, it's just a better way of doing it. You know, the idea of people flying to LA, getting a hotel, paying for food, experiencing nightlife, all at the cost of trying to get your game's name out or cover games in that way. It's just, it's so much easier to just watch a live stream and react live or react after the fact. And I just don't see us going back. So
sure.
Those are my thoughts.
But on the flip side, now we'll just highlight Galvatron's comment in the chat here, says, according to Kotaku,
Jeff Keighley, yep.
Charged $250,000 for a 30-second trailer at Summer Games Fest. That seems pretty steep.
It does seem steep. And I will say, you know, I don't know him at all. There have been rumors and maybe even some facts that he had approached E3 about trying to present things in his own way, and they had not treated him in a way that he felt was respectful. And so some people have interpreted Summer Games Fest is taking advantage of E3's downfall as almost a vengeance mission. I just think that that's business, right? When you see an opportunity, you seize it.
What is business if not vengeance?
Right, yeah. Whether or not you have bad blood, right? And if there's some vengeance on the side, then that goes with it. But, you know, the man needs to make his money. I do think $250,000 for a game trailer is quite high. But I think that...
What are they charging these days for a 30-second at the Super Bowl?
Oh, way more. Way more. I don't know. We're going to have to fact check that. But regardless, shout out to Keighley for putting something together that is very successful and maybe the future. So, Mac, any other comments on this?
$7 million 2024 for a 30-second spot. So, hang on. Doing some math here.
Divided by 250,000. Carry the 3.
30 seconds at the Super Bowl is apparently 28 times more valuable than 30 seconds at the Summer Games Fest. I don't know.
So maybe he is overcharging, because I would bet there's more than 28 times the people watching the Super Bowl than there are watching the Games Fest. That's just my thought.
Yeah, although one could certainly make the argument that the audience is way more targeted.
Oh, 100%.
And ready for what you are pushing rather than that broad thing from the Super Bowl. I still think it's too much money, but, you know, I mean, just to give the best argument there.
No, you're 100% right. You very much know who you're talking to when you're watching Summer Games Fest. Cool. Well, on to our next topic, which is on GameSpot.com. It's about the Asus ROG Ally. It's now $400 at Best Buy, Mac. This is written by Brendan Hess at GameSpot. PC gaming handhelds are one of the most convenient ways to play your Steam, GOG, or Game Pass Ultimate libraries on the go, but they're also pricey. Luckily, if you've been waiting for a solid deal on one of the best of these devices, you can save $100 on multiple models of the Asus ROG Ally at Best Buy right now. To sweeten the deal, you get the official travel case and 1 month of Xbox Game Pass with your purchase. The ROG Ally is the most popular Windows-based gaming handheld, and these deals are the best yet for both models. Now, Mac, I do believe that the new version, which is going to be black instead of white, the Asus ROG Ally X has been announced. I don't quite know the specs. My question for you, though, as a Steam Deck owner, as someone who has embraced the PC gaming handheld and even played some AAA titles, I believe you're playing Baldur's Gate 3 right now.
Yes, indeed, sir.
Is there anything that your Steam Deck doesn't do that you want it to do? So obviously it can't bake brownies, it can't pour a glass of water for you. But in terms of what you, Maction, want as a gamer, is there anything that you are not getting from the Deck?
I have yet to find anything that I couldn't get done gaming-wise with the Steam Deck. And while I don't want to throw too much shade on the ROG Ally, you know, I'm glad that it is the number one Windows-based portable gaming system. Because, you know, as we know, Linux-based for the Steam Deck. And one last thing that I just love about the Steam Deck is that because Valve went Linux-based for it, the support now for gaming on Linux computers has improved insanely well. It's just been fantastic. And that's also useful because if any of you aren't a fan of what Windows is doing with their operating system now or in the future, you don't necessarily have to sacrifice gaming if you decide to go to the only other viable alternative, which is Linux with a bit of a learning curve. You won't have to leave your games by the wayside, which I think is a fantastic positive of all of this.
Yeah, so for me, and I would say this, you can correct me if I'm wrong, I think that my gaming palette may be a little bit more diverse than yours.
I think possibly, yeah.
Okay, fair. So we're on the same page here. And so there's a handful of games that I would like to play on the Steam Deck that may not be in your purview. You know, games like Destiny 2. If Destiny 2
absolutely.
Or Call of Duty Warzone was available on Steam Deck, it would be game over. I'd be on those all the time. And so the ROG Ally can do that. The challenge with it, as you know, and as we all know, is that Windows is just not ideal for a gaming handheld. You can't really suspend your game, you know, like you can with the Steam Deck, because Windows just doesn't function that way. But it's good to know that we have both for both types of people. We really, and maybe we already have it, but we really just need something that's a hybrid of both, where I can play those games that for whatever reason Steam is not allowing me to play due to kernel access that's required or just not being able to do Windows without dual booting, but also to have the interface that Steam Deck offers that you can't get on a Windows-based handheld. So we're in a good time. It's a good time to be alive.
It is. It's a great time to be a gamer.
Well, Mac, one more news story today. And like I said, we're not going to go through all of the announcements that happened at Summer Games Fest. I feel like that would be redundant. You can get that content lots of other places. But what we will talk about is Xbox. Because I feel like Xbox had a very good showing. I think that that's generally accepted. And it almost made me wonder if we have been too hard on them as a gaming community, saying that they don't come up with new IPs enough, saying that it's the games that sell the hardware, stop making new hardware. And Mac, people were anticipating an Xbox handheld. It was not announced. Instead, we found out that they will be releasing some new consoles this holiday season. I think that is unneeded, but my question for you today is more based around their existing IP. We praise Nintendo sometimes for having been able to make Mario, Zelda, Donkey Kong, Kirby, Metroid, Pikmin, many others stretch for so long. And my question for you is, if Microsoft was to take a similar approach with Halo, Gears of War, Fable, and put those characters into other games, kart racers, tennis games, RPGs, would they get less criticism for lacking software, since that's been what Nintendo has done? Does that question make sense?
Yeah. I think we would probably be giving them grief over that, except for RPGs. If we had RPGs involving beloved characters from already established IPs, that one, I think we would wind up, that they would wind up with praise for, I suspect. But I think, yeah, if we had, you know, Master Chief Kart Racer, I think we'd be like, you know, what's going on, Microsoft? Come on, we need a new shooter. But I think RPG is definitely a genre that I think is well-rounded enough, but also different enough that, that you know, people would probably like seeing those. I know, I could be totally wrong. It's been a while since I've Haloed.
No, I totally get it. And I do want to acknowledge what G is saying in the chat. You know, one of the biggest pieces of news that came out the past couple weeks is that Call of Duty is going to be day one on. Now, I don't want to spend too much time here because I feel like, once again, we try not to be derivative of what everyone else is talking about. But this is a big deal. I am still going to buy it on PlayStation because there's features on PlayStation that I like. But for those who have Game Pass and would have bought Call of Duty anyway, now you can access it. And if it ends up being one that you don't like, you don't have to buy a physical copy. So, Mac, anything else you want to say about Microsoft before...
No, not about Microsoft, but just before we wrap, there was one game that got announced last week that I was really excited about.
Which one?
Called Wolfhound, and it's the next game released by the same people who did Chasm. So
no way!
They're back with a new game, and it's not out yet, but they teased it during the whole Summer Games thing. So
Now, can you give us the quick pitch or the elevator pitch? Is this... So a couple questions. Is this going to be a Kickstarter thing? Is it going to be the same style? Tell us a little bit.
No, not a Kickstarter thing. Similar style because it is a Metroidvania. Another big departure is that they're not doing procedural generation for this one, so it is going to be just a set established thing. But it very much is a sort of Wolfenstein 3D inspired in style, in like storyline style.
Awesome.
So involves the Bermuda Triangle, Nazis, all sorts of fun stuff like that. So, yeah, looking forward to it.
Nice. Tell us the name one more time.
Wolfhound. And I can neither confirm nor deny that I've experienced it. So
I was going to say, you're an insider. These are people who you know. So Mac can't confirm or deny. We'll leave it at that. That's been our news for the week.
All right. Well, now that we've seen what's going on around us right now, why don't we take a little look into the past with some video game history? Now, one of the things that's kind of fun that you notice as you look into video game history over time is that we have this concentration of game releases in the late portions of the year, sometimes in the early portions of the year as well. You'll get lots of game releases that come out, you know, after November or October, November, in that era. But they're trying to get a game released before the holiday season.
Sure.
For people who are buying presents and such. Or sometimes you'll have companies that are releasing sometimes smaller games, but really good games before the summer months hit, so that like kids would have something to play over the, you know, over the summer and things like that. But there are periods of time, stretches of time, that video game companies didn't release all that many, or at least all that much of note. And while we might, technically speaking, be in a little section of that, there are a few especially cool games that I think, you know, that were summer releases and I think deserve some note and mention right now.
Yeah.
The first one is a dancing game that I first experienced on the PS2 and released in 2005 called In the Groove. Which was kind of fun because the controllers were done by Red Octane. They, for a little while, were sort of, I think it's fair to call them the upper echelon of strange controllers. Like, they're the ones who made the controllers for the Rock Band game, right?
Sure.
Most of the time, when we were growing up, Lom, would you say it's fair to say that we were always handing the Mad Catz controllers to the person we didn't like?
100%. No one wanted that offering.
Nope. But the Red Octane controllers tended to be a little bit, they didn't do so much, like, you know, reissue or, you know, off-brand controllers. They did the weird ones. The things that required a dance pad, that was your right. Red Octane. The things that required a guitar, those were your Red Octane. And so In the Groove, of course, which had been an arcade dancing game that came out just before, Red Octane was the one responsible for bringing it to consoles in 2005 for us. You know, that's what I meant by the dancing. That's the Easter egg. Okay, there we go. Called
it. Love it. Love it.
So, another game released, this time for the PS1 in the year 2000, a game called Legend of Mana. Lom, did this show up in your library?
You know, I talked about my gaming palette being diverse. This is one that I missed, so please tell me more.
Right. So, it's a JRPG. It's Legend of Mana, which, you know, sounds somewhat familiar. There are games in the same series, the Mana series. But this one was kind of different because, unlike the previous games where there was a world set out, what you got in Legend of Mana was you got a land system that you essentially started in one location that was already set, but as you would complete areas, you would get a new artifact that you would place on the map wherever you wanted it within limits. You know, this was the PS1. There was a grid you had to put things down on. But, like, you would put things down and then a new area would be created there from that artifact. It was almost like, you know, like just add water and bam, a nice a nice thing shows up. And then you could go there and there was a little bit of... A little bit of not especially, or at least in my case when I was playing it, not very clearly understood notions about where you placed the new levels, if you will, sort of changing up the power level of the creatures there. So the farther away from your home base those things were placed on the map, the stronger the enemies there would be, the harder it would be to beat them. And that sort of established this thing. So your first playthrough, obviously, you're just building sort of outward. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And that means that your late things wind up being very strong enemies. Your second playthrough or so, you figure out how to work the system a little bit, and you realize you can save some of these, particularly easy to defeat enemies, that it doesn't matter if they have extra hit points and extra, you know, damage that they'll deal. But, you know, you go ahead and set those farther away for you to travel to. And then those guys who, like, are always one-hitting you and can block your attacks and shoot from a distance and all that stupid nonsense, you go ahead and set them real, real close to your main base so that they have less hit points and their attacks hurt less. It was infuriating when you realized that that was kind of the simple trick to it, and also various ways that you could connect them that would influence the powers and everything in there. But I think it was one of the first, and if not one of the first, it was certainly one of the first, in gaming. Hang on, let me try that again. If it wasn't one of the first in gaming to do that sort of thing, it was certainly one of the first that I experienced where there was a degree of strategy to placing the very levels themselves. And something that I haven't seen since, although I'm sure somewhere out there is a game that goes for at least some of the similar styles. But that's what I thought was always really cool about Legend of Mana.
Love it.
Third, but I think I may very well have saved the best for last. A 1995 title for the Super Nintendo. A little game nobody's ever heard of called Earthbound. Obviously, I'm being a little bit tongue-in-cheek. Earthbound
is
well-loved and well-regarded by many. Again, another RPG... but such a wild and kooky game with a ridiculous sense of humor. And there's this thing where it basically the game pulls more or less a sort of 180 at the end, in the last several hours. But things like the enemies show up on the world map, so you can, like, walk around them instead of actually having to fight them if you don't want to grind. Or the weird cartoonish battles and everything. The music, so on point. If you haven't played Earthbound, but if you have played something like Undertale, Undertale is absolutely...
Right.
It flies because Earthbound ran.
Love it.
I'd encourage anybody who liked that sort of thing to go back, give Earthbound a shot. I think you'll find that it very much hits those notes that you like.
Whenever I'm watching retro game collecting shows on YouTube and someone finds a copy of Earthbound, it's a good day, because it's not like a super rare, hard to find game, but it is a rare game and it's very, very highly priced. And so it's a game that's very much sought after. If you have your childhood copy and you didn't already know, keep it, because it's that game.
Don't let it go. Grab on. Hold on with both hands. So Mr. Nice Guy, that's what I had for video game history, at least for this week.
Love it, love it, love it. Well, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's time for our topic of the week, where we talk about something relevant in gaming and discuss our opinions on it. Mac, and this week we're going to talk about a little game that I think you would like if you got into it, called Elden Ring. Punishingly difficult, but haven't you played some Dark Souls in the past?
I've played the first Dark Souls.
Yeah, so obviously there's some similarities between Elden Ring and Dark Souls. Here's what this article is about. Well, before we read the title, let's just say it's on Kotaku, and it's by John Walker. Here's what he writes. Elden Ring's one and only expansion DLC, Shadow of the Erdtree, is out June 21st. That's less than 2 weeks away. But were you already aware that in order to be able to play it, you need to have beaten both Starscourge, Radahn, and previously optional boss Moog, Lord of Blood? Because it seems that of the PC players at least, some 62% have yet to do so. Defeating Moog requires reaching Mogon's palace, which requires having the Hallig Tree secret medallion and using it at the Grand Lift of Rold, near Leonel.
Oh, that makes perfect sense, of course. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, this is all common knowledge, right?
All making sense. Kneel in this corner with the red orb until the, until the tornado comes and picks you up. I mean, what could be more clear?
That's all you have to do. No player's guide necessary. Or completing Var's questline. Moog is intended to be taken on late in the game, and more than anything, until now it was completely optional. So it's understandable why some have yet to do it. Mac, we don't really need to read the whole article, but the bottom line here is that 62% of people who own Elden Ring, at least on PC, will not be able to access or play the DLC on day one, which is 2 weeks away, simply because they haven't done the prerequisites to do so. So my questions for you, both from a gamer perspective, but also from a business perspective, what do you think about this DLC being released when the vast majority of Elden Ring owners will not be able to play it?
Well, I mean, I guess that's one way to get people to play your optional bosses, that's for sure. So I could see a situation in which, like, from a storyline or a lore perspective or something like that, that the whole premise of what your DLC is based on, you know, some optional tree or optional bosses that are going on.
Right.
Additionally, while I have played Dark Souls, I haven't played any of the other games in that style. I am given to understand that the community that enjoys and plays Elden Ring and is excited about the DLC is pretty well dedicated.
Sure.
So I feel like it's probably not going to off-put the core community there. But yeah, it is an interesting move. I can't even think of a game as we call history in the past, that has required specific things in order to access the new game or the new DLC. I feel like anything I can think of, anything I can point to, has always been sort of like had an optional way to start without. The only thing that's coming right to mind is we know that Oracle of Seasons and Oracle of Ages were developed alongside each other, and you could kind of bring your progress in, in a way. Or one of my favorites, the Quest for Glory series, you could start at any of the things and make a character that was appropriately powered for that game. You just missed out on some options, but not the whole game as well. So, like, I'm struggling. This could be a first.
So I think it is. And let me first say, I really, really like this. But to kind of answer your question, I think about Destiny 2.
Okay.
And whenever new DLC would come out, it would kind of let you level your character up. They would give you like an orb. So if you were someone who had stepped away, they'd give you some little thing like, hey, if you use this item, it's going to level you up. And you won't have better gear than you had before. You won't have better weapons. But you'll at least be at the baseline to be able to enjoy where we're at now. You'd be missing all the story knowledge, but it kind of held your hand and let your character get to where he or she needed to be, mm-hmm. he, she, or they. I think that that's one way of doing it, but I like the idea of a game where there's something that's out of reach. And I'll use an analogy from comedy. So when I was in Chicago, there were a lot of showcases you could do. Some of them were in the suburbs, some of them were in the city, and there's one that was called Comedians You Should Know. And this is something that's across the country that they have. And to get on that showcase, very, very challenging. Like, if you're 5-8 years in, maybe you're getting on, but the reality is you kind of have to work and grind to get there. But knowing that that was there and that that carrot was out there would make people work, would make them grind it out, and would make them craft their hone their craft so that they could eventually get a spot on that showcase. It's the same thing with this. Knowing that there's something out there that you can enjoy, that you can, if you're really like into Elden Ring, that you can grind for, that you can work through these bosses for, and then you get this reward of being able to experience this new DLC, is to me what gaming is all about. A lot of the hand-holding, I feel like, should stop, and we should have stuff out there that people can look forward to. I'll use Monster Hunter Rise as an example. I love that game. I just really need to get back to it. And before I go buy the DLC that I still haven't purchased, I want to know that my character is leveled up. And I want to know that I have enough experience to truly appreciate when I do buy that DLC. And this is the same thing, man. I will say one thing about the profitability. Obviously, if only 30-some percent of your community is going to be able to purchase the DLC, and probably not all of them will purchase it day one, it's going to hurt you immediately from a profitability standpoint. But the lagging indicator will be that people will buy that DLC a year from now once they are ready, or 2 years from now, or 3 years from now. Last thing, Elden Ring came out February 2022, so it's been over 2 years. People have had time to get there. They can't wait forever to put out the DLC just based on metrics alone. They've got to put out the work that they've been doing and start to get some profits and some reviews and some notoriety. Mm. Those are my thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting. I think it's kind of fun as an experiment sort of standpoint, and I'm really kind of excited to see how it goes.
Yep.
I don't know. As one of the card-carrying members of the Hold My Hand Club, I know I'm probably never going to get there, especially if only, like, you know, 30 however many percent have gotten to that optional boss. I'm sure that there are reasons, and I'm sure that right. those reasons will gatekeep Mac here. I look forward to hearing more about this in the future, because, we've only got a couple of weeks?
Yeah, June 21st. And, yeah. And I will say, you know, we often hear about these metrics and say, you know, only 30% of people rolled credits on such and such game. So, I mean, this is not unheard of, especially with a game this challenging. People could play halfway through and feel like they got their money's worth. So, you know, some people just give up. Some people just move on to other things. But for those who are really hardcore, I'm excited for you to experience this DLC. That has been our topic of the week.
Well, now we turn to a crowdfunding project. It's trying to get off the ground. We call this Kick or Kickstart, and I'm going to share with Lom for the first time a crowdfunding project. We're going to talk about some of the virtues and some of the vices and give our opinions on it. And Lom is already starting the most gentlest of smiles as he clicks on this Kickstarter project, and there's a reason for that. This is Lone Fungus 2. So let's go back to a simpler time, right? A simpler time when you were not the Lone Fungus. This is a prequel game, and it's going to take place above ground long before the cataclysmic events that we slowly learned about in the first game. Because Lom and I talked about this, its predecessor, in episode 182 for its original Kickstarter. And then, when it launched, along about episode 265, we talked about the completed project as the indie game of the week in that episode. And I think we both really appreciated it, but Lom certainly said the most poignant thing about it in that episode, about how the developer here, Basti, had gone above and beyond to really cut the fat that we would usually see in Metroidvanias in use to pad time, but that it was a tight experience, still a good full experience, but something that, you know, didn't focus so much on backtracking and things like that that we see a lot. So some actual numbers for y'all. There is a $37,000 goal to fund this. At the current moment, it's sitting a skosh below halfway. It is $15 for a copy of this on Steam, which the $15 is you will be getting access to the early access copy. And of course, that will be updated until and past the retail release. So if you fancy playing a game in early access, you totally can. And if not, then, you know, you can wait until the full release. And the estimated delivery of this is to be September of this year, which is only 3 months out for that alpha. And the expectation is that the late 2025, early 2026 is when the full release will be. But this isn't just another Lone Fungus game. It's not supposed to play the same. It is supposed to feel different, but in the same universe. And that's why we've got whip action, 8-directional whip action.
Yep. Yes, sir.
And yeah, so Mr. Nice Guy, I've vamped for a few minutes. You got any got any thoughts?
So just a couple minor corrections. So in terms of the numbers, I think you said 37,000. It looks like it's 38,159.
Ah.
Just for the case of us being accurate. And currently, yeah, a little less than half. With 11 days to go. I will say, I mean, it's no secret this was one of my top 5 games. In terms of the stuff we reviewed last year, and we reviewed a lot of games, so this really stood out. I absolutely support Basti kickstarting this, even though the first one was fairly successful. And just pulled it up on Steam. It's currently 45% off the original Lone Fungus at $10.99. He has 531 reviews on Steam, very positive, and most recent reviews are mostly positive. Mac, here's my one criticism of this Kickstarter, and it's no secret that I love, love, love this game, and I'm actually going to kickstart the second one as soon as we get done. The release date of the first game was April 7th, 2023, and the estimated release date for this next one is September of 2024. Now, while it is extremely impressive that Basti has been able to put together what will undoubtedly be a great prequel, I almost wonder if Basti should have waited a little bit longer before putting out the second game. And I think that may be what the numbers are telling us. But, I mean, I can recommend the first one without reservation. Go buy it. And I can recommend that you should probably buy this one as well in Kickstarter.
One other thing I will say in the compare and contrast of the first versus the second one is that the first game, one of the things that Basti said about it was that the story of the first game was very much sort of tacked on as he went, as opposed to something that he really had super well established at the beginning. Whereas this second one is very much more story driven, and there's a sort of, as opposed to it being an open world like the first one, this one's meant to put you into specific pathways, and you'll get a chance to go down the other paths later, but you will initially just have to go, like, you'll pick your direction and you'll go for that and then come back for the other things later. So definitely some differences in how he wants to try things. Mr. Nice Guy, I feel similarly, loved the first one. I know I'm going to love this second one. And I will say, though, I do have a hard rule, and that is you got to show me that you can bring it all together with a playable demo. And I am thrilled to say that, yes, Basti has a playable demo for Lone Fungus 2. So you can check that out. Give it a try for yourself. See if it's your type of thing, which we hope it will, and then kickstart it alongside Lom and I, because yes, already bought it!
I gotta say, if this doesn't get kickstarted, I will be very, very disappointed. And 11 days left, it's very possible. Please, if you like these types of games, go support. I vouched for the first game, and I'm excited for the second one.
Same here. Please get out there, support. It's good stuff. Take it from us. And that's been Kick or Kickstart, because I think our votes are pretty darn clear.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, now it is time for Nerdflex.
Oh, woo-hoo.
And Mac has something to say before I dive in.
Yes, indeed. Thank you, Mr. Nice Guy. Every so often, we pick up the gauntlet that you throw at us each week with your awesome nerdy questions, and we toss it back to you with a little thing called a sound test. It is a mystery sound from somewhere, somewhen, somehow in video games, and it's your task to correctly identify it and let us know on social media, email, whatever. You know the thing. Do the thing. So if you're the first one to correctly guess and sound test, let us know which episode, and we will shower you with a gift made with these two hands and sent to your door. But enough hemming and hawing. Good luck. Listen up. You're going to need those ears. We hope you listened carefully, but of course, you know, you could always just press that 10 seconds back button and what? Just do the thing.
Do the thing. Well, ladies and gentlemen, as you know, if you're here live, you have a job to do. Let us know in the chat your multiple choice gaming related question. Mac and I will use nothing but our noggins to try to answer. Mac, we're going to start with the test bank today. We got a question that's based on an FPS, which is your favorite category of gaming. But this is one I believe you've played. Here's the question. Which Bond film is the GoldenEye level Aztec based on?
Huh. Wow.
Now, I know you've probably played GoldenEye 64.
Uh-huh.
But are you big into Bond movies like I am?
Not especially, no. I can name a few of them, but I don't know. I don't know what Aztec would come from.
Yeah, I don't either. But I think it's safe to assume that it's one of the movies that came out before GoldenEye. So that eliminates the Daniel Craig stuff and a lot of the Pierce Brosnan stuff, which is probably what you and I are most familiar with. I don't know. I'm just going to throw one out there. I'm going to go with You Only Live Once. Is that the name of the movie, or is it You Only Live Twice? The Bond movie.
I don't actually know. I know one of those is correct. So that's our multiple choice question.
Yeah, question within a question. What do you think?
I know Moonraker. I feel like something like Dr. No or Mr. No or something.
Dr. No's
is that
a movie.
One?
Yeah, Dr. No.
Yeah, yeah. So I'd go with Dr. No because that's just another one. Because I can't think of any that occurred. You know, if it was in Fort Knox, I would be, Moonraker.
Right.
You know?
Right. So many Bond movies. Well, I'm going with You Only Live Once or Twice. And Jack is going with Doctor or Mr. No. It is Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, let's flip it and see what we got. Oh my gosh, Mac. It's Moonraker.
What?
It's Moonraker.
It can't be Moonraker. You didn't go to the Aztec thing in Moonraker.
No, but here's the thing. And I think that I forgot about this until just now. I believe in that level, you can actually pick up a Moonraker gun.
Yeah, the Moonraker laser. Is that where it came from?
Must be. And so, dude, wow. I feel like a teacher would give you partial credit. So, it is what it is. Hey, we learned something new, though. I didn't know that. Some of these, Mac, one of them, just to give a reason why I'm clicking through, one of the questions was, how many rings does Sonic need to collect an extra life? And I feel like questions like that, we just don't need to
how
waste,
dare
waste
you
time with.
Keep the easy ones away from me.
I'm just saying. Well, how many is it, Mac?
It's 100.
It's 100, and I feel like that's way, 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 way too
Yeah, easy. It's industry standard.
Yeah, because, I mean, pretty much every... Anyway, okay. Here is a Rockstar question I don't know the answer to. What connects the names Phillips, Clinton, and DeSanta? What connects the names Phillips, Clinton, and DeSanta? D-I-Santa. And I don't know if it's asking if a game connects them or if there's like a prefix.
Well, if it's Rockstar, then it's got to be, and assuming that it's a game, right? I don't know any of those names, but I do know that Rockstar has a few different games. One's the Grand Theft Auto series, right?
Grand Theft Auto, Red Dead Redemption.
And Bully?
Bully was a Rockstar game. I don't think that one... I don't know, maybe.
Well, I mean, I would just guess Bully because I don't know anything better, and I feel like I haven't heard any Bully stuff in a while, and... I don't know. Bully just seems like a thing.
I'm trying to think, though. It's been a while since I played GTA 5. And the only reason this went into my mind is that there's three names here. And there's three main protagonists in GTA 5. And the whole premise of the game is that you switch between the three of them and experience different parts of the story. But I can't remember if this is their last names. You had Franklin, you had Michael, and you had Trevor. Yeah, Trevor Phillips. Michael DeSanta, Franklin Clinton? That one I'm not sure about. But I do feel like this could be the names of the characters, the protagonists in Grand Theft Auto 5.
Sweet, I'll go with you. That sounds very reasonable.
Okay, if I'm wrong, but let's give it a shot. Dude, my logic was correct.
Heck yes.
Main characters in GTA 5.
Amazing. Dude, I don't know how you do it sometimes.
Only because there were three of them, so no worries. Well, cool. Let's move on to one more question. Okay, we got another question, and this one is an easy one, but we're going to go with it. It's a Sonic question as well. How can Sonic catch his breath underwater?
Oh, you got to go for one of those bubbles under the water that pop up.
You got to inhale one of the bubbles. By swallowing an air bubble. You're correct.
As an aside, there was a point in time, especially during undergrad, where I had to like wildly shift my sleep schedule on the weekends to work nights and during the week to, to go to school during the day because that's when they do it. I struggled a lot, nice guy, to wake up sometimes when I was shifting my sleep schedule like that. But I found that danger music that played for Sonic when he was underground or underwater about to, die from loss of oxygen, that would get me out of bed a shot, man.
You're crazy. I can't wake up to stuff like that. I can't.
I mean, it was a necessity and it worked. Hey, and if you have problems waking up and don't mind the high blood pressure, then maybe this could be right for you. Consult with your doctor.
Dude, that music, if I remember, it's like... I could not, because here's the thing, that anytime I took a nap, I would always be scared. I would be like, can I close my eyes or am I going to get woken up in a very abrupt way? Anyway. That has been our Nerdflex.
All right. Well, now we turn to a little bit of legalese.
Legalese.
I'm not a lawyer. I just play one on a podcast. And just as a short one, I found out something very interesting over this last week. And that is that the first app store for iOS devices not run by Apple went live this weekend.
Really?
Yeah. Which is kind of wild because Apple is well known for having a lockdown on what is, on its store and stuff like that. Uh-huh. And so this was a huge shock to me. And of course, not only am I not a lawyer in the US, I'm also not a lawyer in the European Union. However, this was all made possible because of a little bit of legalese that got passed over there in the EU in 2022, specifically the Digital Markets Act regulation of 2022, abbreviated to the DMA. Most of the regulations' terms didn't come into force until 2023, so it is a rather recent thing. And I'm just going to quote a couple of parts here. Quote, the DMA aims at ensuring a higher degree of competition in European digital markets by preventing large companies from abusing their market power and allowing new players to enter the market. This regulation targets the largest digital platforms. They are gatekeepers due to their durable market position in some digital sectors and because they meet specific criteria. And that's just the quote from the sort of summary of it. But where the rubber meets the road is that online search engines, social networking, video sharing platforms, operating systems, web browsers, cloud computing, advertising, things like that. If you are in that sort of a thing, these spheres that are very uniquely digital, and you had over a certain market capitalization, or which I'm given to understand LOM is called market cap, right?
Yeah, you're right. You got it.
As a little dummy here,
you're not a dummy. Stop it.
What's market cap?
Yeah, it's basically a way of estimating the value mm-hmm. of a company.
So if I just said, you know, instead of market cap, I just said it's what the company is worth, that's probably fair?
That's fair enough. That's close enough. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, obviously, as with any simplification, we're losing a lot of nuance that I think's worth there. But yeah, yeah, just worth. And so there was a whole bunch of stuff. So they're like, if you're worth over a certain amount and you're in this sphere where, you know, everything is very digital heavy, these sort of digital markets, then you're going to be subject to certain provisions, like you can't take data from two different services and combine them. An example is like Facebook and WhatsApp are both owned by Meta, and they're not allowed to use data from both of the platforms in order to kind of not grant them sort of insurmountable power in targeting advertisement, for example. There are specific things for the protection of business users, a specific prohibition in the case, again, sort of like Google, preventing them from being able to give better Google search results to businesses that specifically integrate their products type stuff. You know, sure. All these sorts of things to try and keep you from pressuring, you know, newer entrants out. Specific requirements against bundling and so on. And there's a whole lot of legalese that goes into it. But the thing that Mr. Nice Guy, I think, surprised me insanely was the fines are specifically outlined for what happens if they're like, hey, if you don't do this or not do this, as the case may be, fines of up to 10% of the previous year's market cap or previous years. So your value as a company, you run afoul of this and the European Union is prepared to fine you 10% of last year's value of your company. You do it again, 20%. So as it stands right now at this moment, Apple, which is worth $2.96 trillion, would get slapped with a 10% of $296 billion with a B for
B.
Apple. Yeah, if, for example, they decided to thumb their nose at these provisions, which, you know, very, very surprising to me, because that's not the kind of fines I'm used to seeing in anything, any sort of legally stuff proposed in the United States. And so we can have a conversation about whether or not these are good ways to address bad behavior, or whether or not that behavior in the first place is even necessarily bad. And I think it's worth having those conversations. But I think one thing that is fairly clear is that the EU is at least setting fines that, I mean, that would certainly emphasize a change in behavior that you felt was incorrect, that sort of stuff. So anyway, I'm not a lawyer. That's not the law, but it is legalese.
Love it, love it, love it. Well, thank you everyone for tuning in to episode number 307 of Two Nerds in a Pod. We appreciate each and every one of you. Before we go, we have one last segment called What We've Been Watching and What We've Been Playing, where we talk about just that, the cool, nerdy stuff we've been into across all platforms, streaming services, physical and digital media. If you're here live, you got a job to do. Let us know in the chat what you've been playing and watching. Mac, what have you been into the past couple weeks?
So the past little while, I've mostly been watching Taskmaster on YouTube. Occasionally been watching a couple of cooking shows, because sometimes they can be nice and relaxing. And as for playing, almost exclusively Baldur's Gate 3, as you called out previously. But that's me, Mr. Nice Guy. What about you?
I gotta know, have you finished it? Are you doing a second playthrough? Where are you at?
I am very close to completing it, but I know how close I am, so I'm trying to wrap up those few last quests.
So I actually participate pretty frequently in a subreddit called Game Boy, which is obviously a throwback to the original Game Boy. And they're doing a little challenge this year, every year, where they have a game of the month. And the game this month is Mulmania, which is one of the Miyamoto gems that hasn't ever gotten the notoriety it really deserves. So I had to delete my save file because I found a physical copy a while back. And they make you start fresh and show a screenshot that you're starting fresh to see if you can get through it this month. So I've been playing Mulmania, a lot of Balatro on the Steam Deck, and I've hopped back into Dead Cells as well. Mac, this year, for whatever reason, I've been going back to the games that I know I'm going to enjoy and not really trying as much new stuff other than the indies we've played. So that's where I'm at with that. As far as watching, lots of YouTube, and that's pretty much been it. Mac, why don't you take us home, buddy?
All right. Thank you, everybody, for coming out and being part of the show, for helping make episode 307 what it was. We appreciate that you are here. And for anybody who's listening to this after the fact, you can come join us, twitch.tv/2nerdsinapod with the number 2, of course, and participate. Send us your cool, nerdy questions. Try and identify that sound test and everything in between. But until we see you next time, at the usual 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Central, be excellent to each other and keep it nerdy. We will see you then.
Be kind. See ya.
Bye.